Welcome to the Golf Better Podcast. I'm your host, Derek Dominski. The Golf Better Podcast is brought to you by GolfBetterTucson.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and our other social media pages to keep up with the latest and greatest in what we are up to. We are back. It's been a while, and I hope you are all healthy and safe as we bridge this wild time and pandemic. Things have been all good here, as busy as ever with golf and golf lessons at an all-time high. I just want to thank you all for your continued support, and due to high demand for the podcast to return, here we are with Season 2. Our first guest of the season is world-renowned putting coach John Graham. He helps and has helped numerous top professionals with their putting for years now, and has been more in the spotlight recently with his work with Justin Thomas. In this episode, we learn a bit about John, his journey, and some ways that you can improve your putting. Enjoy. All right, John Graham, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's get right to it. Go ahead, tell the listeners that may not be familiar with you a little bit about yourself and how you got into coaching putting.
So I was actually a bowler as a kid, a 10-pin bowler. I'm from Rochester, New York. I still live there, born there, raised there. Still live there, married, four kids. and bowling was really my first love. There was, you know, one summer when I was doing a little bit of golfing and you know, up north where I'm from, when the summer times end, that's when bowling begins. And a bunch of my friends that I had met at the golf course were doing this bowling thing, and I'm like, oh, I want to try that. And I was hooked on that immediately, and I never played golf again until after college. Once I got into golf, I worked at a golf course just as kind of a fun thing. I was a cart guy for a while, and a range guy, and a shop. Then I actually went kind of into the PGA business, was going to be a head pro. That was the original goal. And then so was an assistant at a couple of different private clubs, kind of bounced around a little bit. And then became a college coach at a two-year school up in Rochester, New York, called Monroe Community College. And had a very successful career there for, you know, 3 national titles in 6 years.
Wow.
And I had kind of started teaching by that time. So, like, a lot of the kids that would play on the team, because it was a local two-year school, you know, it was filled with kids from the local area. So a lot of them I knew as, you know, very young kids that I actually almost taught the game to, and now they come to play for me in college. So it was probably the most fun I've ever had.
Awesome.
Instructing golf was doing this college team thing. And because I was having so much fun with it, I actually pursued that career path for a while. I interviewed for some head coaching jobs at some bigger schools, and it just didn't work out. I had I think by that time I had 2 or 3 kids, and it just wasn't going to be viable. My wife had a good job, and, you know, we weren't really going to move anywhere. So I was like, yeah, that's not going to work. And that's when I got full time into teaching. My full swing kind of career path switched into putting when I ran across Aimpoint Golf and Mark Sweeney, which was probably 2008 or so, right when it first came out, and I got involved very, very early on, and actually quit teaching full swing and actually just taught Aimpoint classes. I would travel all over the world, teach other instructors, teach classes when Aimpoint was new and kind of up and running. And through that is how I got my first player out on tour. They had seen some videos that I had done, and they were curious, and kind of started a dialogue actually through social media. I was a huge Twitter user at that time, and was contacted out of the blue by Trevor Immelman. Sent me a DM saying, hey, you know, if I sent you a few strokes, would you take a look at them? I'm like, sure. And that kind of is how it all got started. He, you know, we agreed to meet at some tournament. And while I was there, another coach saw that I was there and was like, oh, can you please show my guy some stuff? And that was Charles Howell. So that was like 2013 or so. And Charles became my first regular client maybe a year and a half after that. First we just did Aimpoint, then we got into the stroke stuff and some short game things. And it kind of was just Charles for a long time. And then as Charles was improving, people started to see me around and ask other questions. They knew I was the Aimpoint guy, but some people on tour were a little bit unsure if they wanted to do the Aimpoint thing.
Sure.
But when they saw that I was doing more than just that, some other opportunities came around. I spent a little time with Daniel Berger, kind of part-time for a little while, kind of behind the shadows, always off-site. And then it just kind of exploded, and a whole bunch of things just happened. And now that's all that I do. So I no longer teach at home at all. I'm not affiliated with a club. Mm-hmm. I simply coach on tour and go home and be dad when I'm home.
That's awesome. Now, what are a few misconceptions that people have about Aimpoint? Because a lot of people, I think, they see it. I think it's a very scientific, slow way, and that's obviously not the case. But go ahead and talk a little bit about Aimpoint and where you feel like people maybe just get that idea a little bit wrong.
Sure. Well, initially when it first came out, it was fairly involved. There was a chart you used, and there was math you had to do, and there was some variables that you had to collect information about. And then once you had them, you kind of looked up the answers, and it was incredibly accurate. And for me, it helped me figure out, okay, well, if I got it wrong, what was the piece that I got wrong? I could figure out exactly what mistake I made, make the adjustment, and okay, there's the right answer. So for me, engineering types, doctors, they would get heavily involved in it very early on. Most of everybody else is like, man, that's just way too much. I'll just look at it and take a guess. And then over time, Aimpoint evolved into what everybody is more familiar with now, which is Aimpoint Express, which is significantly faster, and it produces a really, really good answer in a very short amount of time that still allows for a good amount of feel. Now, to answer your question, I think most people assume Aimpoint is just a science-based event, that there's no feel, there's no art, there's no imagery. It's just you do this thing, you look at the answer, and you go. And that's really not what it is. If it's done often enough and learned properly, it's much more art and feel than science. And I think it kind of gets a bad rap because of that.
Would you say it's by far the best way for someone to improve their green reading?
No question. It is an absolute skill accelerator. If you're a beginning golfer, junior golfer, you have to know it. If you're a putting coach, you have to know it. Now everybody may use little different pieces of it, and it's actually quite malleable. There's pieces that are interchangeable that you can use, and some people will use part of it and some people use more of it, and that's perfectly fine. But gosh, if you're struggling with that area, it's really easy to get better quickly. I can't think of a better way.
Yeah, I think accelerating the learning, right? Because for a lot of people that don't have time to create all these experiences of what certain breaks look like and play over an amount of time, like maybe some tour players have, I found as well that just giving some people some of these core principles really allows them to start helping things kind of add up in their brains and allows them to see more of the curve that they need to see.
Exactly right. They start looking in the right-ish place much sooner than they would having to do it through trial and error. And because of that, they see more accurate pictures sooner, and they can remember them better. It just makes everything a whole lot easier to learn.
Now, you work with a number of professional clients at the highest level. What are some areas that you help them with that maybe you wouldn't have thought you would have needed to?
Gosh, that's a good question. The things that surprise me still are more speed based and like kind of macro green environment based. Now because of my old Aimpoint prodigy, like we first learned it as a much more of a macro event where we would actually practice reading the putt from 100 yards away and see how close we could get it. And through those experiences, it taught me to kind of look at the environment for much further away to actually start reading it, and then refine my read as I got closer and closer. So one of the things that surprised me with these better players is how little the information they gather on their way to the green. So they get up there and they say, okay, well, now that I'm here, now I'm going to do my thing. And expanding that time and that view from a farther place can really help some people generate and kind of formulate an idea of, okay, what's the general green complex doing that I may miss from up close? Because those kinds of things are very difficult to see when they're real subtle and you're really on top of them. Sometimes easier to see when you're actually farther away.
Now, what are your thoughts on green reading books? It seems like everyone uses them. What is your opinion on those? Should they be allowed in the game? Do you feel that a player is at an advantage, disadvantage? If it can be, is it good for some, not good for some? What do you find with your clients at the professional level?
Yeah, gosh, it's a mix for sure. When they reduced the size of the green book, it really affected things. When it was the original size that was bigger, or an unlimited size, there were guys that were bringing out actual 8x11 size pieces of paper that had, you know, markings and topography and measurements on it. And the scaling was significantly larger, so you could actually more accurately pinpoint, okay, well, there's what the hole's supposed to be. Here's what I'm supposed to be. What am I actually dealing with? And when they changed that and made it much smaller, they became significantly more difficult to use as in a beneficial way to generate a specific answer. For some people, they can be very good for generating a window of answers. It's like it's between here and here, and then they use their feel to kind of figure out the rest. For some people, it really is disastrous. They spend more time looking at the book than they do actually generating the imagery and the art piece of it, that they lose track of the little mini athletic adjustments that kind of need to be made, that can only be made when you're kind of immerse yourself in the environment. So it really depends on the person. I will say they're exceedingly difficult to locate where you actually are on them now that the sizes are so small.
Sure.
And if the hole's not cut in the right place and you think you're in the wrong place or in the right place, but you're not, your answers can be really, really bad. And then as a golfer, but at the level that I'm dealing with, you know, they can usually pick up on that, but they're like, oh, well, the book says it's got to be this.
Mm-hmm.
And when golfers at that level start doing things that they don't feel is correct and they get a completely bad result, they get very aggravated, and then they just throw the book away. It's like, I've never used that again. I'm gonna trust myself. If Lisa is wrong, it's just on me instead of me trusting something else that I didn't really believe in the first place.
Sure. Now, you work with a number of golfers. Justin Thomas, you guys have worked for a while, and the stats really have been trending awesome. To the extent that you would like, go ahead and talk about what you and JT have been working on.
So we first met in June or July, maybe, I can't remember which, and basically I was just a sounding board to start with. It's like he had been working on some things with his coach for a long time, Matt Killen, since college, I think, if I remember right, and he was just kind of looking for a different take on things. He's had a similar issue for a significant number of years, and they've been working through it. He's like, maybe somebody else has something different to say. So I really wasn't brought in as like even an interview. I was just brought in as a sounding board. But because of that, my main goal was to provide for him a way to better assess what's going on either during a round or post-round so that he could say, okay, I didn't putt well, and this is why. One of his big complaints was that after a bad putting day, he wouldn't know if his aim was bad or if his read was bad or if his stroke was bad. He couldn't figure out exactly what was not working, except that the ball wasn't going in. He would still have great days. Like, he doesn't need a coach to have a great putting day. What he needed a coach for was to say, okay, when it's not going well, why? So that I can focus my energy in that place. And that was really my main goal and mainly what we've focused on since we met. So it's mostly fundamental skills of, can I hit at the distance I intend? Can I read a green better? Both of those he needed help with. And stroke-wise, we honestly haven't really done much of anything. We've certainly figured out things that don't work, and we can just throw those in the trash heap and say we don't have to worry about those anymore. And Justin's very much a feel player. So most of his descriptions of his stroke revolve around that feels good or that feels bad. It's not about I feel the club doing something. This just doesn't feel right.
Sure.
So working within an environment, figuring out a rhythm and a tempo and a feeling in his hands or something like that that's not very specific is the environment that we generally have to work through and have had the most success in. Every time we've tried something specific that was mechanical, it would have inconsistent results, some good, some bad. But as we took, much more kind of generic and vague concepts together, his stroke would perform better. But most of the progress in his actual putt making has been with his speed control and green reading.
Excellent. Well, now let's go ahead and talk to how our listeners can improve their games. Do you recommend that the average golfer track their putting stats? And if so, what stats or what would you look for that they should track?
I don't necessarily know if they need to track their stats, but they certainly need to be self-reflective on overarching patterns that are happening, whether it's too short or too long. Every player has to know which they tend to miss, whether it's left or right, on putts that are straight. It's one of the first questions I ask every single player that I ever meet, is that when you're playing in something that matters, whether it's your weekend game or the club championship, whatever it is, you have a putt that is maybe 5 or 6 feet long, that is straight, you've read it straight, you know it's straight. When you miss that one, you tend to miss more left or right. Based on whatever that answer that is, that'll at least give them some direction in terms of possible adjustments to make to try to mitigate that. The one thing I know for sure about golfers when it comes to putting is that they're going to tinker with stuff.
Yep.
They're going to change their grip. They're going to change what putter they use. They're going to talk to their buddy and say, hey, what do you think about this? And part of my job is to inform them of what things are worthy of tinkering and what things are not. And that all starts with the answer to that question of which way do you tend to miss?
Mm-hmm.
If you tend to miss right and you tinker in a direction that encourages the chance of hitting it more to the right, well, you've made yourself worse. So you need to know what things may be applicable. They may not work, but at least they're not contributing to the mistake you've already got. So figuring out that has to be number one. And then I would say a tendency of do I miss more high or low?
Sure.
And then which type of break. But the starting direction one is the bigger of those two that I would want them to know and to track.
Yeah, and I've seen some of your videos online, and I'd highly recommend every listener go check those out. You have a good way of kind of saying what helps putts start more right or more left, kind of these lefts and rights that you're referring to here that, again, I think you cover really well in your videos. Now, okay. If there's one overall skill, what would you say is the most important skill for the average golfer to acquire in their putting?
Distance control, no question. It's not even close. It is so much farther in terms of even just in terms of like the emotional day of a round of golf. If your distance control is better, you will feel less stress and you'll be able to play better and more even throughout the entire day with all your clubs. If your distance control with your speed is much better, you can actually learn what green reading should be. If your distance control is better, you're going to make a whole lot more. Everything makes sense if you can hit it as far as you're intending to do. Then you can actually see, oh, I had the right read or I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or I obviously had the right speed or I didn't. That's the obvious one. Start line's a little bit trickier to know, but everybody already practices that anyway, so we'll just leave that one there.
Mm-hmm.
Distance control definitely is number one. You got to practice your distance.
Now, what would be one or two drills that are really easy for our listeners to go ahead and practice on the putting green? Do you have any that you would recommend?
Yeah. So this is a real simple one. And I think most people get confused when I tell them they need to work on the distance control and they just go out to like 30, 40, and 50 feet and practice lag putting. That's not what I'm talking about. Every single putt is about distance control. Your 8-footers, your 10-footers, your 15-footers, you need to be able to hit it whatever distance you're trying to hit. So with that in mind, It's kind of like a modified hurricane drill. Some of your listeners may be familiar with it. Instead of using a hole, I would put out a coin or a tee and then place one ball about 3 feet from it, another ball that's four, and you kind of make this spiral shape as you kind of go out from the center of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 feet, all from different angles, and try to make the ball finish exactly where the tee is or where the quarter is or where the coin is to see if you can control the total distance the ball rolls. Another thing I think a lot of players don't consider is what's the actual distance they're trying to hit the ball. Most people just want the ball to go in. I'm trying to hit it in the hole. However it gets in there is fine with me. Well, if your read is going to match, you need to hit it the speed that your read is, you know, predicting. So if you're going to tend to hit it more aggressive, maybe 2 or 3 feet by, you've got to have a way in your mind to say, okay, well, here I've got this 8-footer, but I'm really going to try to hit a 10 so that my read and my line and my speed, they all match and the hole gets in the way. So this hurricane drill that I'm referring to takes into account the entire length that the ball should roll for, not just the distance between you and the hole.
I like that. Yeah, with kids, I found that's really helped is I'll kind of like tack down a dollar.
Yeah.
Onto the finger, and they have to stop it on the dollar. So no longer, they can't just blast it by the hole and, oh, I almost made it while it cruises off the green. It's like, no, this ball literally had no chance to stop on the dollar. And I found that really resonates a little bit more with them as they understand where the ball needs to stop, not at one moment in time. This ball was relatively close to the hole.
Right, exactly. That's great. That's a great modification of that. I love it.
Now, what are one or two ways besides aim point? Is there any drills that you'd recommend for green reading and how our listeners can improve that skill?
Yeah, sure. So the hardest thing about learning green reading is the feedback piece. How do I know if I read it correctly or not? And the only real way to learn that piece is to kind of simulate what you're about to produce and then putt it and see how close you would get. So I'm a big fan of ball markers or quarters or coins or whatever. And what you would do is, let's say you've got a 10-foot putt with some break on it. Depending on your personality type, you can put out a number of coins that kind of simulate where the ball should be at various points on its way toward the hole. Maybe one at one-third away, maybe one at a half away, and one at two-thirds away, where you think the ball should be by this time. And then go ahead and hit your putt and see how closely your arc that actually happened in the real world matches what you thought was going to happen, so that you can see you can see the comparison between here's what I think is going to happen, here's what did happen. The majority of golfers have a large discrepancy between what they think is going to happen and then what they feel is going to happen. So when I have players do this drill, regardless of skill level, they usually can draw out a better picture than if I just ask them, what's your read for this? So they might draw out a picture that shows a break of about a foot. And if I ask them, how much does this putt break? And they'll go like 6 inches. And then when I show them what they've actually drawn, they're like, wow, I can't believe the ball actually breaks that much, even though it looks like this. And it's a very, very important idea for golfers to get comfortable with is there's a lot of movement in the ball that they don't usually see because it happens where their head is down when they make it the stroke. And that movement the ball has early on has a significant influence on the total amount of break that's needed to get this ball to go in. And the only way to learn that is to actually draw it out and then compare what happened to what you thought was going to happen. It takes time. It's a little boring, but it's really beneficial.
Right, especially that early part of the putt, even at the highest level. It just seems like that early part of the putt is just maybe not even paid that much attention to, especially compared to what it's doing around the hole.
100%. I can't tell you how many people, at every level, including the tour level, that says, well, it's just going so fast in the beginning, it doesn't matter. That is wrong, everyone. It matters. The ball is moving as soon as you hit it. Now, it may not be moving very much, but when you project that movement out across 10 or 20 feet, the impact is significant. It may have moved very, very little in that first 3 feet, and actual terms, but the projection of that movement over space is large. The ball is moving. You got to account for it.
Excellent. Okay, so one more question here. In general, if the average golfer could devote only 1 hour of time per week to improve their putting, how would you recommend they spend that time?
So should I assume that they're going to do an hour at one time during that week, or like break it up into like,
a couple
50-minute sessions?
Yeah, break it up. However, again, if they've got 60 minutes during the week in total, what would you recommend?
So I would recommend that, let's say they did it in four 15-minute segments.
Yeah.
There should be one group of 15 minutes that's devoted toward making the ball start where they want. It may be a training aid. It may be a chalk line or an elevated string line or something that can help them monitor their aim and their start line more on the stroke mechanic side. Another 15 minutes should be spent on making the ball finish on this quarter, some distance control, some lag putting, not even using the hole at any point, just controlling, making the ball stop where they want to stop it. The other 15 minutes would be a little bit of the screen reading stuff that I just talked about, with kind of drawing some things out, hitting balls and see how close they come. And then the last 15 minutes should be some kind of performance-based game where it's full process, full read, some score-based event that they are trying to beat their own personal best at this particular game, encompass all the aspects of putting, cover all the three skills, and then the performance of it.
Excellent. So, John, where can people find out more about you, your coaching, and again, these videos that I referred to that I think are very good?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. So I'm easily reachable on social media. You can find me on Twitter with the handle at John Graham Golf. Same with Instagram at John Graham Golf. YouTube, the same. The videos that were mentioned are on a website that me and my business partner have. His name is James Ridyard. He lives over in the UK, and he does wedge work, and I do putting stuff. So it's basically a series of short game videos that combine both of our skills. And the website for that is called shortgamesecrets.tv. And there's 15 or 20 different videos on there of different things, either practice drills or whatever you may need when it comes to the short game. James is probably the best in the world at it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know James quite well. You two, I think, are a great team, very smart. And yeah, there's a lot of value in those videos. So, John, thanks so much again for coming on. We really appreciate your time. Hope you have a great rest of the weekend. I hope your guys play well in Phoenix.
Thanks. Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity, and hope your listeners learn something.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode with John Graham. I would highly recommend checking out his putting videos at shortgamesecrets.tv and giving him a follow on Instagram and Twitter. Putting is an area that everyone can improve, and it is so important for you scoring your best. Thanks again to y'all for your support of the podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your golf crew. That way we can continue to grow and get the world's best guests. If you can also leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice, that would really help us out. Until next time.